Look at the time. Look at the time.
Look at the time. It is Huttin' the Clock. Noon on a Wednesday. So that means that it is Huttin' the Clock. Jonathan Huttin from Hot Mic with Huttin and Withrow joins us now. Our very favorite time of the week. Huttin, I'm going to toss this up to you. I'm going to let you choose. Do you have some Super Bowl thoughts that you still need to get out? Whether it's Patrick Mahomes thoughts, Kyle Shanahan in overtime, or are you ready to move on?
I have a beef with Travis Kelce right now.
All right, let's talk about it.
So apparently he's mic'd up, or NFL Films is on the sidelines when this tirade is going on. By the way, Jim Nantz and Tony Romo should have covered this more. That's number one. Number two, NFL Films has apparently muted this part of the audio.
Ooh.
What are we doing?
Why?
Why are we placating to them so much? This is, if any other player, Mace, you know about the boom mics that are over there.
Yes.
You think they're editing out anything they hear for the year-end recap for any of those players? No. They're editing out this for Travis Kelce? It has nothing to do with Andy Reid, by the way. It has something to do with Taylor Swift, I'm sure. This is BS. Come on. What are they doing placating to this? No, there's not many players in the league that would have this type of treatment, and Travis Kelce doesn't deserve it.
No, I'm with you, Huttin, on that.
That was uncalled for.
Sometimes you hear, like, if it's a word they can't say, they let them talk,
they
and then they bleep,
effects.
And then they let them talk more.
It is muted.
They don't completely just mute it like that. Yeah. And again, I go back to this with Travis Kelce. And I'm glad that Antonio Brown put that out on social media, because he was right. If that was him, now he has a history.
Oh, AJ.
No, Antonio Brown did,
and
too.
And AJ.
And AJ Brown. But they're both right.
I think Darren Bates said something about it as well.
Exactly. They are right. Like, if it was them and they ran up on their coach like that, every announcer, every talking head nationally would be criticizing and ridiculing and any other words you can think of when it comes to those players. They would have asked for them to be suspended next year, or where they would have said, hey, listen, they need to cut them. After something like egregious like that, you need to be cut. That's why when it happened and we talked about it that Monday, I'm like, that was not called for. Like, there's a way that you go about being, showing your displeasure.
So
on the field.
The fact that Nance and Romo just kind of brush it off, and now that they're muting this, tells me that, they don't want to piss off the Swifties. Am I wrong?
No,
But that is the most absurd and ridiculous thing that I have ever
heard. Well, but they had three new advertisers that are for women only that advertised in the Super Bowl and paid $7 million per 30 seconds.
I hear you.
They hit that target audience. That's what this is about. I truly believe that after this has happened.
I feel like in the past there are probably some things, maybe that didn't happen out in the open that everybody is aware of, but if they wanted to play everything that their microphones picked up, they could probably go to a lot of places. But we maybe weren't aware of it. That's one of the things I love about the NFL Films, though, because on occasion you will see a really interesting thing that happened on the sideline or somebody's thought.
Yeah.
Right before a big play, and like, wow. And that's the cool part of having that. But, I agree. I don't see there's any reason.
Well, and here's the thing.
At least play some
TMZ,
of it, right?
Yeah.
There's
TMZ
a way you can do it.
Going to get this audio. I can't wait for TMZ to leak this audio. I mean, because there's no reason to protect Travis Kelce. I mean, the dude is a lunatic on the mic anyway.
I don't think it would affect Travis Kelce going forward if people heard what he said.
But and this is different because he hit an official. But I can't even remember who it was. It was 2 years ago. The special teams player who came over and like shoulder bumped one of the officials. Everyone lost their mind over that. That was the storyline of the game. This is so the way that things were going for KC, it reminded me of the Christmas Day game against the Raiders for them this year. Things crumbled. They were just kind of discombobulated. That's the way the first half was going. And Travis Kelce had one catch at that point, I believe. He wasn't in the game. And again, I'm not into I don't buy into everything with this. It's just the timeline. Every time he touches the football, they're going to pan to Taylor Swift. You think he wasn't thinking about that? He absolutely was. That's why he was. I truly think that's why he was mad.
And that's what did I say Monday? I said, listen, he understands the ramifications and the magnitude of this game. Not just playing, but everything that goes along with this game. Mm-hmm. He understands it. That's why he was so, because the score was 10-3. It wasn't like it was in the fourth quarter and it was 27-10 or something like that. And it's like, okay, yeah, Travis, yeah, I can see why you're being upset. But it was 10-3. God, they were moving, but San Fran was just playing good defense. And again, there's a way you do this. It's like you show your displeasure. I've done it several times. I'm walking and I'm cursing and I'm screaming. I take my helmet off and I sling my helmet. But one thing I will not do is go and get in my head coach's face and bump him. I don't even, well, I will go up and talk to my offensive coordinator. He and I may have a heated, but it's nothing to the magnitude where I get physical with a guy, because it's like, that's just a level of respect.
Right. And especially to me, right on the edge of field of play, exactly, where the guy's trying to do his job. The head coach is doing his job.
When he did it, everybody played it down. I'm listening to Stephen A. I see Tom Brady. It's like, no, stop making
it. Because they won the game.
Exactly. Like, people, I don't understand this world. Like, listen, call a damn a spade. You can love the spade. That spade can be your brother. It can be your mama. It can be your grandmama. But call a spade, and then move on. People have a hard time with calling a spade when it comes to certain individuals and their notoriety when it comes to sports or anything else. That's my whole problem with it.
Hud, I'll be honest. This is I was sort of impressed that the Chiefs won it with all of this going on.
For a
long time, like you have to give them credit, and I'm not just talking about Travis Kelce, because we just had a great discussion last hour about playing through distractions. You know, and compartmentalizing and staying focused with trade rumors and everything like that. That was more of a traditional discussion. This is a little more outside the box. But think about all of the players and people around that situation who had to sort of put it aside. I thought that was pretty good. That wasn't easy, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, I think that's head coach, quarterback, tight end. I mean, Kelce, to his credit, is capable of putting that aside. And I'm just double checking here. This was on Inside the NFL via the CW, but it's through NFL Films, of course. And it was the NFL, not the CW, who edited this out. That's according to this report through Sideline Films. It was where you can find this on the actual clip. Again, he's mic'd up because they want the postgame footage with him and Taylor, right? So, but this was a storyline, but it wasn't really storyline. And I'm not trying to make a bigger deal than what it is. It's just peculiar to me. If that's any other player, Nance and Romo are talking about this based on when it happened. It was so early in the game. And that made it that was what was kind of an eyebrow raise to me, because Kelce's known for kind of being a temper, a hothead. And Willie, I was listening to you earlier this week when you said that you were watching pregame. I missed this with Cowher and Reed, but I mean, they were talking about this, but with how he had to kind of get him under control. That's all fair, and it played out in this game, but that's still a storyline. That's a big one for one of the best players on the field.
And the announcers downplayed it during the game.
I know.
Right?
And it just doesn't – it feels fake. It just feels fake to me. I hate it.
It's yet another example of the NFL prioritizing its end goal and money over really anything else. I'm like, I get it. I understand. The NFL is a for-profit business, but it feels so obvious what they're doing.
Yeah. Again, just on the surface level, I don't think Jim Nance and Romo are going to gloss over something because they're told to do something. Aikman criticizes the NFL all the time, and they love Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. The NFL loves them as the duo. So I'm not saying that. They're true pros. Nance is at the top of the list. But adding everything together, there's a lot of things going on in the Super Bowl, but that's pretty big. And to not go back and reference that is just odd to me, and it's hard for me not to read into that.
I don't know about the reading into it and what goes through their mind. I do know that in real time, sometimes you have to make quick decisions, and once you go past it, it's hard to bring it back. But I do think I would love to ask Nance, just from an educational spot for me, like, what's going through your mind there? And did you guys consider taking that a little bit further? Because I agree, it was a bigger thing than they made it out to be. Like, I think that needed to be discussed further, what just happened. Like, you never see that. Mm-hmm. In a Super Bowl? You've got to talk about that more. And that feature that Bill Cowher did with Andy Reid would have given them a way to say, hey, if you watched our pregame show, we talked about Andy Reid trying to corral Travis Kelce and all those emotions that he has and trying to channel it in the right way. It was a great coach-to-coach discussion about how do you get the most out of a player. That would have given them some space to talk about what just happened.
Caroline, can I take it one step further on another thing I want to address?
All yours?
Steve Spagnuolo. Hats off to him. He signs an extension with the Chiefs today as the defensive coordinator. Get this. So he did things defensively against San Fran that no one else in the league was doing in this game. And he stuck to what he does. He went cover zero. Let's see. He went cover zero 21% of the time. The league average in playing San Francisco this year, 6.2%.
Wow.
He went cover one 40.5% of the time. League average against their opponents, 23.8%. And he went, let's see, man coverage, 64% of the time. The average for their opponents against this offense, 30%.
Jeez.
He brought it. He just brought it. And that defense, I mean, Chris Jones, exceptional game. I don't think he's a Chief next year based on the contract situation that played out. I just hats off to Spagnuolo. He's not going to be talked about very much. He is exceptional when it comes to this. And normally he's building a defense to match or get close to matching their offense going into the postseason. This year it was vice versa. And they showed up, and I thought Spagnuolo just stuck with something that no other team was doing against San Fran just by league average. And it worked in large part.
Will Spagnuolo be the first career coordinator in the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
The first which coordinator?
Like career coordinator, like in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
In other words, who never became a head coach?
But
he was a head coach. He was a head coach for the Rams.
But for what he did as a coordinator, four Super Bowls now as a coordinator.
That's interesting. I never thought about that.
Mm-hmm. Dick LeBeau is there, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
But Dick LeBeau was as a player, right? Yeah. Did Dick LeBeau go in as a player?
Good question.
I think he's in twice.
We need to check that.
Pretty sure. If he's not, he will be.
I could be missing someone.
He's legit. He's legit.
Spagnuolo. I don't think any other.
He is a great example of not a good head coach, great coordinator. Mm-hmm. And that's not a bad thing. He was not good with the St. Louis Rams. He's exceptional as a coordinator, and the Chiefs are lucky to have him.
Jonathan Hutton is with us, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. Hutt, we're going to hear from Brian Callahan, new offensive coordinator Nick Holtz, and Denard Wilson here in just about 15 minutes. What questions do you still have, and what do you want to know? What do you want to hear from the coordinators today?
Well, so I want to see the follow-up of, you know, we mentioned Callahan saying something that I'm totally fine with. I just haven't heard it from the Titans organization, period, where you asked to describe an offense, and he started by running through all these different pass elements. I mean, I've never heard that from that building. I want to see what these guys echo with that. Plus, defensively, I'm more intrigued there. I've heard he's a fiery guy. I don't have a clue. And I'm just curious to see the mentality defensively of what we saw and what we're going to see. Carthon came in and did this is the biggest difference, I think, from what John Robinson was doing to Rand Carthon. And it's evident just based on what happened with Kevin Byard. The investment was made at safety. I don't think they're doing that. I think they're going to load up and pay corner instead of safety. Load up and pay corner, get a true number one or draft one, and then load up on the defensive front. I mean, that's what the best defenses are doing. There's some safeties that are getting paid, but not many. I think that's the biggest glaring difference just in 1 year. And now I think we see what the true transition might be.
But I think as you say that, it is interesting because it sort of reinforces that they went outside the box a bit over the last few years with what they paid special players. And you completely understand why they did it. But Kevin Byard and Derrick Henry were paid so high at positions that a lot of teams just don't pay that kind of money. And that made it sort of a creative situation for them to overcome.
And that made it difficult to trade Kevin Byard, you know, because there's not many teams that pay their safety, you know. But if they do pay their safeties, you know, Buda Baker. I'm just going through some of that. They're on a team playing for a big money. You don't need another big money safety. So I think it made it difficult. But you can build a defense from back to front. We saw that in Seattle. And it can work. I'm not saying it can't work. The Titans defense was pretty good in stretches. I also look at it. Vrabel would have been on board with this as well, right? So that I think it, one thing I've kind of glossed over, and I didn't mean to. I just overlooked it, was the whole Byard thing. That to me is the biggest difference defensively, just from the mindset of Carthon to Robinson. And there's no doubt that they've just hired a defensive coordinator that agrees with that. So, I mean, again, they need help at corner desperately.
And think about what – and I don't know how much 100% Carthon had in this philosophy, but,
right.
You know, they could have renegotiated Tannehill, Byard, and Henry's contract and created more cap space for last year. They could have done that, but they decided, yes. No, we're going to pay the bill now and put ourselves in the situation that they're in right now, which is now they have a lot of flexibility cap-wise what they want to do.
I think they tried to trade them, Willie. I mean, they're just like Byard. I think they, they did. I mean, they did shop them. You just don't get the return, so you keep them. I mean, yeah. I think that was.
But the worst thing would have been to kick the can down the road and still owe them a lot of money, right? And still maybe want to cut them.
Yeah, you're going to owe more. Like they just, you know, they decided to bite the bullet and do it now. If they're not going to trade them, just have another year and let it run out. I mean, it's fine. They don't owe anything moving forward, and it's not often that guys play through their contracts. Tannehill got paid every dime.
Yep.
So did Derrick Henry.
Yep.
That's rare. That's rare.
Yeah. A lot of times teams get a lot of dead money out of great players like that because you want to keep those guys around as long as you possibly can.
What do you guys think Henry gets on the open market?
That is the question, I think. Because I think it could take well into the summer before he finds out, right? He's going to wait.
I think a team will overpay for him.
You think so?
What do you think?
I think a team.
Because I was thinking he could get four on the open market.
I think somebody will pay, but the longer it goes, the more the money goes down. I think if this goes into like after free agency, after the draft, I think now the money can go down.
Do you think he's a first wave kind of guy where that everybody's got their budget and jumps in?
That's a good question because a team tried to trade for him, according to him.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
A contender. I mean, that would be a team that is run first. I'm assuming it was Baltimore. He actually said two teams, I think. Mm-hmm. I would assume one of them was Baltimore.
But as a rental is different than signing a free agent.
Yeah.
You're renting a player that you feel like fits your offense.
Yeah.
Like Henry doesn't fit every offense.
And it still would be a 1 or 2 year deal.
Max two.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah. But I'm not saying it's $10 million. I'm not saying it's 12. No, I'm not. But we're saying four. I mean, market value for him. Just look at what I still think he has tread on the tires. By the way,
of course.
Oh yeah. There's not a lot of comparables, right? To his
not Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah,
and he's a player that will help you win a Super Bowl. That's the other thing. He will help you win.
Is Zeke Elliott the comparable? That's an interesting.
He's the only comparable, honestly. Because Ezekiel, because of the, you know.
But I don't think Ezekiel has much left, honestly.
He's been hurt, too.
He was a little thick.
I think Henry has something left.
But what did he get? What did Zeke get last year? Because they're the same age, right? Henry and Elliott are the same age, same draft, right?
Are they really?
Yes.
Yeah, they're the same draft, yeah.
Because the Cowboys, there's a lot of talk Cowboys.
Yeah, you're right. But see, the thing that messes with me is how long it took Henry to actually come into the league and play.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to look up the salary for Elliott, but it's not going to be – I think Henry's getting more than this.
Because Elliott was sitting around most of the summer, right, he signed with the Patriots. He wasn't first-day free agent.
And I think that the public perception of Ezekiel Elliott at that point was – much less favorable than what it is of Derrick Henry.
Because you get the intangibles with Derrick Henry. Elliott's intangibles are not the same.
Zeke got $3 million.
$3 million.
I think then $4 million base. Absolutely is on the table for Derrick Henry, at least on the open market.
Worth up to $6 million. But, I mean, again, Elliott's done. And I don't mean that as a knock. I mean, he's good at touchdowns. He reaches the end zone. You get him 5 yards or in, he's going to score. Henry's got more than what I feel like he showed this year. I do. And I don't see him taking less than what would be market value. In fact, I think there will be a couple of teams that will pay him more on a 1 or 2 year deal. That's great for him.
Elliot
that's
is
about
28.
That's about his longevity now.
Mm-hmm. Elliot will be 29 next year, so he's actually younger. But they went in the same draft, the 2016 draft, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Well, Henry was 2016.
You guys agree,
draft,
though?
Right?
He's a two down back that decreases the value. But you guys agree he has more left than what would be the average 30-year-old back in the league?
Yes. Yeah,
I
think
agree.
He does.
I would agree wholeheartedly.
So that ups his value to me. I think there are teams that would restructure other players to bring him in. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's day one, but the fact that teams try to trade for a running back, I mean, again, that giving up draft picks for a running back is rare because most teams don't even want to – they'd rather draft a running back. And I view it from the lens of – I'm just taking him for his word. Mm-hmm. Two contenders – tried to trade for him. Now, albeit apparently not a great deal, tried to trade for him, a running back where you don't invest in the running back, period, but they felt like he could help them win a Super Bowl. That is value. And he can help a team win a Super Bowl. I hope he wins. I really do. There are only a handful of contenders. I would love for him to do that. But he's been a pro's pro, classy the whole way. There will be more than a couple of teams that are really intrigued to bring him in and help their team. And he's a two down back, sure. But on those two downs, I mean, you got to load the box. And if he goes to the right offense, that's going to help the quarterbacks. And I'm thinking Miami, Baltimore, Dallas. I mean, we could keep going here.
All on the table. I think they're all teams Cleveland, that believe they could be a Derrick Henry away. And honestly, sure. That might be right. It might be
Jacksonville.
Right.
I mean, we can keep going, but Florida is very intriguing to him. I think that would be interesting to see what those teams might be willing to give. Dallas is a no-brainer, but again, like I think he kind of waved that off just as a shrug. Like everyone thought he wanted to be a Cowboy. I don't know the backstory there. Baltimore, too. Just, again, the way they run their offense, they're going to give Henry more than 6 carries in a playoff game.
I know the thought of Baltimore probably just sends shivers down the spines of Titans fans. Jonathan Hutton, yeah. Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. Hutt, appreciate you as always. Thanks for stopping by, and we'll chat with you next week.
Yep, same. Always enjoy this, guys. Have a great rest of the week.
Appreciate it. You as well, Hutton. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. We'll get to the coordinators, Brian Callahan, Nick Holtz, and Denard Wilson coming up next. Caroline Ville, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Titans head coach Brian Callahan is up at the podium, so we'll send it over to them now.
Interviewing. Making sure we brought guys in to speak to them, wanted to see guys in person, wanted everybody to feel the presence in the room. And so it was a little bit drawn out. It's still going. Obviously, there's still hires to make. But part of that process was intentional. We were trying to make sure that we got the best people we could get for our staff and for the fit on the personality side as well. So that part of it's been really fun. It's good to get to know other people around the league, guys that I haven't had some familiarity with. Obviously leaned heavily on Rand's relationships. Obviously, if you all know Rand, he's about as big a people person as there is. And he's got a ton of contacts around the league, people that he knew that I didn't, that we had conversations about. Rand was involved in all the interviews as well. Really good sounding board for me, really good advocate of people that he knew, which was really helpful to be able to sit and talk with him about the interview processes. So, again, really excited about it. It's been a thorough process. I'm proud of what we've put together so far. I'm excited about the people we're bringing into the building. And it's something that I, you know, it's nice to have some life. I've been by myself for about 3 weeks, but me, Rand, and Tom Jones have really been living together here in the building. So good to get some more energy and life in it as well. So with that, I'd like to bring up our new defensive coordinator, Denard Wilson. Come on up, man.
How you all doing? First of all, just thankful for being here. Thankful for the opportunity. It's great to be a Titan. Great to be around this organization, being around Rand, being around Brian. I can't wait to get started. You know, we're on the early phases right now, but this is a great opportunity, and I'm excited to be here. Questions?
You know,
base defense. Mm-hmm. I imagine you'll call base once in a while. What do you kind of envision building off of from there as a start?
Well, right now we're just going through the process. You know, we just got here 2 days ago, really. The staff's coming together. So we're evaluating the players, evaluating the talent that's here. You know, about football, it's not about scheme. It's about the players, right? So we have to figure out what they do well, and then we'll put the scheme around them, all right, to allow their talents to flourish. I could tell you this about the scheme, all right? And I learned this a long time ago. General George Patton said this. Nobody ever defended anything successful. You're going to attack and attack some more. We're going to be attacking defense. We're going to be violent in our approach, all right? We're going to be smart. We're going to be intelligent. We're never going to compromise for competing. And that's the style of brand of football that we're going to play around here.
So you mentioned the attacking part of it, so I would imagine blitzing will be heavy. You know, you look at your background, whether it's Bowles, Greg Williams, like how much did that influence what you plan to do here?
Well, just like anything, you learn from the people that you've been around. And obviously, I've been around a lot of great coordinators. So a lot of things that they do is entrenched in my being. A lot of the philosophies they've had, you know, I believe in. So we're going to blitz, but we're going to blitz, and when we blitz, it's going to be smart. It's going to be educated. It's going to be there at the right time. It's just not going to be reckless. We're going to play coverage. We're going to play man-to-man. We're going to be multiple in everything we do, all right, in terms of our fronts, any of those things. So we'll be versatile, all right? We'll be, you know, we'll present problems to offenses, all right, on how we approach it, and, you know, we'll go from there.
Who have you said have been your biggest influences, you know, to get you to this point?
It's been a lot of guys. Like, you know, you mentioned Greg Williams. He gave me my first opportunity, him and Jeff Fisher, with the Rams. You know, I hold them at a high regard. I still communicate with both of them. Todd Bowles was outstanding to be around. Just being around Coach Harbaugh this past year, hell of a head coach. I think he's a Hall of Fame type coach. And those guys have been big influences on me. Also, we have some guys on the staff that we have here that has also, you know, been influencing me. Frank Bush is a hell of a coach that we have as the linebacker coach. Tracy Rocker, I was with him in Philadelphia. He's a hell of a coach. Steve Jackson and I worked together with the Jets. Steve Jackson was my coach as an undrafted free agent, all right, in Washington. Chris Harris being around here, he brings so much energy. Respect Ben Bloom and what he did at Cleveland and the way he had those guys play. And then it was a lot of people that was already on staff, like Clint McMillan and Lori, who's here. Those people, you know, they're great people to be around. They're going to be a great influence on me, helping me through this process.
You've been with the Ravens most recently. Mm-hmm. Their philosophy always seemed to have a knack for finding the football, creating turnovers. What's your philosophy regarding trying to get the football?
It's not going to change. You know, we understand this. The ball travels further and faster in the air than it does the ground. So we have to play outstanding pass defense. We got to keep the ball in front of us. But within doing that, we have to attack the ball with violence. All right, the way you get takeaways in this game is population and technique, all right, and the manner in which you play. So the same philosophies they have in terms of the Ravens defense, it's going to be the same philosophy that I carry. It's been the same philosophy of all the guys that you mentioned before that I work with.
Stages of evaluating the unit you're inheriting, just kind of what stood out about the players?
Well, the guys that are here, they play hard and play physical. That's the number one thing. All right, they're tough guys. All right, they play with discipline. All right, they're physical. They're violent at the point of attack. And when you see that and the effort that they have, and you mix the coaching and the new nuances that we'll bring, you know, we'll allow them to flourish a bit more.
What were you looking for in this position, and why was Denard a good fit?
Everything you guys see so far. Guys that had great knowledge of scheme and what defenses have to be nowadays in the NFL. There has to be a willingness to be multiple, to play different coverages, to play multiple fronts, to be able to mix the coverage scheme with the talent that you have, to be able to blitz when it's required to blitz. Be able to play max coverage when you have to play max coverage. There's just an element of playing defense now in the NFL with the way that the passing game is and the way that these offenses are that if you lock yourself into one thing, you tend to get found out pretty quickly. And so just one of the things I always respected about the places Denard's been and the defenses he's been a part of is that ability to be flexible and adaptable to what the scheme on offense is presenting you. Meanwhile, still keeping a core – fundamental approach to what is important on the defense. And as Denard has talked about it, but that's to me was the most important part schematically. The other part of it was the person. You know, as you guys get to know Denard, as I've got to know Denard, is great energy, really positive, good to be around. He's a guy that I like sitting next to, and I hired a lot of the people on the staff with that in mind, is that they're guys that I want to go to work with every day, and I hope that they, as a staff, want to work together themselves, and I think that your team feels that as well. So when your staff is connected and you want to be around them, hopefully the locker room feels that as they come into the building with us. But at the end of the day, they're guys that I like being around and present a lot of positive traits, both in the schematic portion and the relationship portion, which to me are equally as important when you're building a staff.
You interviewed, I think, 4 or 5 places.
Talking to Denard.
Denard, yeah. Why was this and Brian the right fit for you?
Well, it's the same thing. First of all, you know, I've always admired the Titans organization. Followed this organization when they were in Houston. Had a lot of people that I've worked with that come from the organization. And when I got here, I was already excited about that, right? And then when I met Brian and I met his, you know, I met the way he is, the way he presents himself, the way he wants this team to be connected, right? The core values in terms of what he believes in as a person, in terms of having good people around him, having friendships, and also grinding and working together. You know, I admired that about him. I had a relationship with Rand already. You know, when we were young coming up, Rand Carthon and I, he was a pro scout and I was a young coach. And we had numerous conversations just, you know, during those days of, hey, when we get to this point, this is how we would want to do it. And we've always been in contact and always admired each other on the way we way each other work. So it was a natural fit. And I'm happy to be here. You know, I'm learning about the organization, being here, and I'm excited to go to work.
For your career from the back end, mm-hmm. As a defensive back coach, how much have you learned from that perspective about what needs to happen up front, and how do you now kind of to plug into the whole thing?
Right. When you work from the back to the front, it's like a puzzle at the end of the day. All the pieces fit a certain way. So, you know, from a grand scheme standpoint, you can understand, you can look at the game from a big picture because you're looking from the outside in and from the back to the trenches. You know, like I say, you know, I've been around great D-line coaches throughout the course of my career, great linebacker coach. Like I mentioned again, Frank Bush is a hell of a linebacker coach. And as a young coach, I learned a lot from those type guys to learn how to put it together. And over the years, I just got better at understanding how the puzzle fits.
What makes a good defensive back in your position?
First of all, you know, the first thing I'm going to look at is this guy talented? And in terms of giving effort, and is he willing to compete? If he's willing to compete and he gives effort, has outstanding ball skills, can run, physical at the point of attack, violent at the point of attack. And when I say that, it's when the ball is in the air. You look at his attributes in terms of his foot speed, his quickness, his change of direction, right? A lot of things about DB play isn't just about their athletic ability. It's about position and leveraging their eyes. And are they willing to look at the right things on a consistent basis? So just looking at those pieces and putting it together, for me, if I see a talented player, you know, I feel I can get the best out of them. And, you know, the more talented players we have, the more talented players we welcome.
You look at how deep, or rather, offenses are now, right? So many 3 receiver, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Nickel is almost base. Mm-hmm. What's your approach to how you look at DBs? Like, do you want them to be able to inside and outside, or do you plan to have guys specialize?
Well, it goes back to this: the more you can do, right? When you draft players, you know, you don't want to peg a player in one position. The more you can do to help the team become versatile. Like, you can have a corner that, you know, he brings a different aspect, and he can line up at nickel, and he's a good blitzer. He can line up in the slot, right? This is a matchup game as well. You know, there's so many great receivers in this game, and the game is spread wide open. You want to have people that's versatile, all right, to play numerous positions, to line up, to be able to adjust and adapt to what you're getting from the offense.
And then on top of that, like, this organization, they've struggled to develop the DB position. You look at guys you work with, you know, Jamal Adams, Hamilton, Bradbury. And what has been the key for you to be able to get the max out of these talented players?
Well, I live by these three principles as a coach. As a coach, you must be able to teach, motivate, and inspire. And any player that I've ever been around, the first thing I pride myself on being a hell of a teacher. I'm going to motivate them to be better than what they think they should be or reach the potential they supposed to. And I'm going to inspire them to go get it. And the coaches that we have on the staff, they have the same mantra. They believe in the same thing. So when we get a player, whether we in free agency or in a draft, those are our guys. And we're going to do everything we can in our power to teach, motivate, and inspire them to maximize their potential and go out there and have success.
That might be part of the answer which you're getting ready to give me, but from day one when you meet your guys, what are the things you're going to preach that you want to see, non-negotiables, you know, day in and day out?
Well, we're going to talk about effort and the way we play, right? We're going to talk about having obnoxious communication. We're going to talk about brotherhood, playing as one, right? A team that fails to connect is a team that fails to win. All right, so the connection and the way we play, the way we communicate, the way we gel, that's going to allow the defense to come to life. Because when they believe in one another and they trust in one another to execute their assignment and play at a high level, that's when you get outstanding, violent defenses.
When it comes to Jeffrey Simmons, he's one of the biggest leaders on this team, obviously. How excited are you to have a guy like that, and what are the qualities that you see in him on the field and obviously in that locker room?
Well, obviously, I had a talk to him the other day. Man, he has a great personality, outstanding young man. But when you watch him play, he's a big guy. He's versatile. He could play the three technique. He could play outside. He's explosive. He has great hands. He can affect the play. He can affect the game by himself. And, you know, to have players like that and put them in positions to have success, it's a wonderful thing coming in here when you have a guy that plays at that level.
Much like Brian, this would be your first opportunity to be a play caller at this level. What's your approach in that regard, and how do you feel like it'll go?
Well, you know, it's still early in the process, but, you know, we have OTAs, we have training camp. As we go through that cycle, you know, you get better and better. You learn by doing, right? So you get better on your job. Iron sharpens iron. So we'll have call it periods and all that stuff. So, you know, you'll get better on the job. But also it goes back to what I just said earlier, the people that trained me to get here. And then I can't mention enough the defensive staff that we put together. They're going to all be a part of it. When we get into game planning, they're going to have their own sections. They're going to be the head coach of their sections, whether it's third down, 2 minute, first and second down, drop back, the run game. So I'm going to lean on those guys. And then when we get into game plan, into the game plan is already done, right? So now it's about calling it how you saw it in terms of how the teams attack, their personnel, their tendencies on situational football, okay? And then as we start to play, we have to adjust to the schemes that they have because they're going to have new wrinkles. And with the guys we have and the wealth of knowledge that we have in that defensive room, we'll be able to adjust quickly, all right, play by play, quarter by quarter, all right, half by half. So we'll be fine in that direction.
You said you and Bran talked about how you would want to do things one day in positions like these. What are some of those shared traits in how you both want to operate?
Well, both of us take pride in what we do, right? We spend a lot of time on the small details, all right, not missing any steps. Being able to connect with people, with players, with people in the building, bringing energy, all right, being humble in the same time, you know, just respecting the process, all right? Brand and I had a long obedience in the same direction. We started off, you know, in smaller jobs, and we've been able to build our careers step by step without missing steps. So when we're in this position, you're prepared for it.
Brian, given your role, obviously, as the game manager, head coach, and calling plays on offense, were you looking to find essentially kind of the head coach of the defense, and did you find that in Denard?
Yeah, I would. You know, that's a interesting way to put it. I know it's how people talk about it these days, but I sought out to find the best defensive coach I could find, period. Head coach of the defense, however you want to label it. I just wanted the most dynamic, talented young football coach I could find on the defensive side, and I think I found it. Denard's going to have autonomy to run the defense the way he sees fit. As a head coach, I'm always my job is always to oversee that process, help him where he could need help, for him to lean on me when he has questions about what an offense is doing. But at the end of the day, the expectation is that You know, Denard's got control of the defense, and I'll be there as a resource and an asset when he needs it. But yeah, I wanted a guy that could command the defense, command the room for sure, and I think I found that.
Question for both, forgive me. You guys kind of mentioned earlier, there's a lot of connected tissue on the staff as far as guys working with each other. You have a former high school teammate on the staff,
yep.
All those types of things. What does that mean to come into a new place with all you guys having so much connectivity?
Yeah, I think that we're always the product of our environments and our upbringings. And so there's guys you come across over your time in the league. And I think we're fortunate in the fact that we have a lot of really experienced coaches on our staff, even though obviously I'm a first-time head coach and Denard's a first-time defensive coordinator. But it's certainly not our first time coaching, and it's not our first time with a lot of the guys that have been in the rooms that we're in now. The important part to me is that you're open to that experience. So guys that have been around and done things that I'm going to lean on the people that I've hired to help me. And I think Denardo will say the same thing. And so when you have relationships with people, and it's not about just knowing somebody. These are guys that we've been to battle with, been in the trenches with. We've been in up and down seasons and goods and bads. And so I know how to talk to these guys. I know how they're going to respond when I react a certain way. And that's important because you need that. It's hard enough as it is to win football games and to have guys that you have relationships with that you've built over time. A lot of these guys, for both Denard and myself, have built relationships with these guys over time and believe in their abilities and their ability to communicate with us. And so there is an element to that that is important to have some people that you know. There's also guys that I've not worked with on this staff, and I'm speaking as the head coach. You know, I didn't know J.O. I didn't know Justin Houghton. I've heard of him. I had talked to him, and the minute I sat down with him, I thought, this guy can really help us. And so I was open to all roads to building the staff. And there's some guys that I've got relationships with that I've worked with prior. There's some guys that I didn't know at all that I came away really impressed with, obviously, Denard being one of them. So I think it's a really good mix. I think we had a great mix of experience. I think we have a great mix of youth. And I think we have a great mix of personalities. I think as you guys get to know them, you'll see it. But I think there is an element of relationship that's important when you're building a staff, that you do have some of that with the coaches you bring in. Obviously, Denard's got great relationships with a few of the guys on defense as well, and that was an important part of the building the staff process.
Do you also feel like one of the themes there is the teaching part of it? Sorry.
One more time. Let's go back. What is you from Denard?
Yeah, I just want to hear it.
You know, the same things that Brian just talked about, you know, I feel the same. And then when you're around guys that you've worked with, It's about how those guys handle success, and then how do those guys handle adversity. I've seen most of these guys go through that, and I know, you know, when things get tough, you know, they're going to buckle down. They're not going to waver. They're going to get better because, you know, at the time when you need to get better, they're going to be there right there, and they're going to be knocking at the door. So, you know, I'm comfortable with the guys we have on the staff.
Things you were looking for in putting this staff together. Is another theme you're looking at just developing how these guys develop players at positions? Because it seems like when you go do the research on any of these position players, like that's one of the biggest things a lot of them have done and had success at doing.
Yeah, that was a intentional part of the process, along with the personalities I was trying to find, making sure they all fit together. Another huge part of that is guys that have shown and proven that they can develop and coach players over time, because that's the name of the game in the NFL. We're going to draft players. They're going to be young. They're going to make young player mistakes. Our goal is always to get those players from that point as rookies to hopefully second contracts, third contracts, Pro Bowls, All Pros. That's the goal, and I wanted to be equipped with a lot of guys that have proven their ability to do that.
To approach the synergy aspect on offense, whereas like I've seen in the past, coaches have had like you go grab trick plays, you grab third and forever, you grab red zone. How do you plan to approach that?
Is that for me or Denard? Both.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be the same way. You know, when we get to talk about when Nick comes up here in a minute, but at the end of the day, we hire people because they're good at their job, and we want our guys to feel empowered to go do their job, and part of that's going to be whatever each person is assigned to do. We're going to have experts in those areas. So third down, red zone, just like Denard described on defense, these guys, everyone's going to have an area that they're responsible for, and their input in part of the game plan. And I'm going to lean heavily on those guys and their expertise, just like Denard said he would as well. That's generally how things are set up these days. It's a collaborative approach. It's a collaborative process to make sure you're getting the best from everybody that's on your staff, and you're getting the most information you can have from each spot. And, you know, I think that's how it's what I'm accustomed to. It's how we worked in Cincinnati. It's really how I've worked almost everywhere I've been, but particularly when I was in Cincinnati, that approach served us really well. And you get a lot of good ideas. You get a lot of good perspectives. Like I said in my opening press conference, there's something to the diversity of thought. You know, you want guys that have had different experiences in different places, have different answers, because ultimately we're trying to do the best we can on Sundays to put the guys in the best spot so we can go win games. And that might be information from Kylan Butler as a quality control coach. He may have a tendency for me that he brings up on a Thursday evening in the red zone, and we might use that to help us win the game. And I think that there is nobody that's too small in the process, and there's going to be a lot of guys that have a lot of voice in the process, but ultimately we need as much input from as many places as we can so we can build the best game plan every week.
What's the dynamic going to be?
Mine's for Coach, so.
I got one more for Denard.
Okay.
Just you obviously work hard to get to this point. I guess what's the feeling as a coach, as a man, to now have a defense you can call your own and maybe proven Brian hire the right guy?
Well, like I said, you know, you go through this phase, you go through life, you go through the job process, and you put in all the work. You know, you start from the bottom and you work your way through. And, you know, you get to the point where you know you're thoroughly prepared. This is a hell of a feeling, all right? To be named the defensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans is a hell of a feeling. I couldn't be more happier, proud to be in an organization like this. And, you know, we got to put it together, and we got to put a product out there that represents this organization the right way.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
All right, we'll take a quick break before we hear from new offensive coordinator Nick Holtz, Caroline Willie D. Mace. We are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.